Chasm, Chapter 3, Interloper. Steve gets to take Bucky home 2 weeks later with an ankle monitor, a schedule for meeting with Dr. Rinaldo, and a healthy level of suspicion. Steve understands that he's basically risked his entire position within S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers by extension by vouching for Bucky. Even Hill, who's had his back for years, grits her teeth when he explains why Strange can't examine Bucky. Look, there are some things in his past, things that I know about and that I swear aren't dangerous, and he isn't willing to divulge them. Please, just let me take him. I'll monitor him day and night. I can be objective about him, he begs. Steve, she says with a migraine-worthy sigh. Are you serious? He just proved that he's still aggressive and impulsive, and I'm sorry, but it's a huge red flag that he won't let the psychic near him. He needs to be with me, Steve argues. You two attacked each other, she argues back with an incredulous look. He doesn't like the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents or the psychologists or anyone you have here. I've known him since we were children, and I can contain him in the event that he gets violent. I have Agent Carter next door and Codename Falcon coming over every day with PTSD counseling experience. Tony Stark can bill me anything I want, Agent Romanoff knows Bucky's case as well as you do, and Bruce. Bruce is practically a psychologist, and he knows all this stuff about meditation and anger issues and trauma. What are you telling me, Steve? She asks in exasperation. I'm saying that the best place for Bucky, the actual best place, not just the most comfortable or the place where I want him, is with me. He'll respond to us. I know he will. Just give it a chance. You know I can't do that. Almost no one at S.H.I.E.L.D. believes that he's not playing us, and, just in case you've forgotten, we recently discovered that a third of our organization was an international terrorist group, and then another third jumped ship after the splinter. So, no, I'm sorry, I can't pile one more doubt on top of that. She turns to go, and Steve stops her. I'll go to Fury, he threatens, reluctantly but with complete seriousness. So now they're here. Hill's done going to bat for him, and he realizes that this can break S.H.I.E.L.D. even further if the naysayers turn out to be right. He knows they're not, but he also knows that Bucky has secrets. The boy who used to be an open book and who'd been so honest even in his pranks and his borrowing is now a mystery that Steve needs to solve to keep a lot of people, including Bucky, safe. So he keeps notes. He buys an extra tablet and doesn't connect it to the internet, so Stark and others can't reach in. He password protects it and hides it between folded t-shirts. He records the things that Bucky does that snag against his mind, and he stays up most nights poring over his notes and looking for patterns. He looks over the Winter Soldier file for the 100th time. He rereads his notes from his conversation with Dr. Rinaldo. He loves Bucky like a friend, brother, and lover all rolled into one, but he watches him like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Sam drives the two old soldiers back to Steve's apartment in his Civic while Steve attempts to make stilted conversation with Bucky from the front seat. Bucky alternates between pulling apart the split ends of his hair and staring out the window, and Sam eventually flips the radio on to an R&B station to drown out Steve's questions about what Bucky wants to do and eat and where. Too many choices, too soon, he texts Steve when they're sitting at an intersection. As Steve reads it, Sam clears his throat and pitches his voice above the music. Barnes, we're eating in 2 hours, okay? Steve cranes his neck to see Bucky nodding at Sam's words. Steve opens his mouth to ask what Bucky wants for dinner, but Sam glares at him as he eases his foot off the brake. They've talked about easing Bucky into civilian life several times over the past 2 weeks, but Steve has a mental block about coddling him. He's so used to thinking of Bucky as a rock, and he knows how much Bucky values his independence, even when he's hurt or sick, so Steve's mind keeps rebelling against Sam's clear instructions. But being in Bucky's presence always seems to enforce what Sam says about PTSD and POW rehabilitation. As stubborn as he is, he's out of practice in everything, from making decisions about what he wants to eat, to hygiene, to basic conversational rules. And whenever he catches himself stumbling over something that comes naturally to the people around him, he winces and bites his lip or his knuckles. So Steve leaves the question about dinner alone and plans a nice meal of steak and potatoes and greens that he hopes Bucky will like. Until Bucky gets comfortable with having a wider range of preferences, he'll just have to fall back on what he remembers. Not that they'd ever had steaks like the ones currently thawing on Steve's counter, but it's close enough. Sam parallel parks in front of Steve's building, swearing at the obnoxious Lexus that buzzes by while he's still backing up, and Steve climbs out, hoping that Bucky won't need a direct command for that, too. Luckily, Bucky follows his lead and gets out of the car, craning his neck up to see the building across the street from which he'd staked out Steve's apartment. Steve does the same thing by muscle memory, unable to forget the mixed feeling of relief and worry he'd harbored for months when he'd known who was up there and why he wouldn't come down. "It's nicer inside," Steve jokes lamely, scratching the back of his head when Bucky just looks at him and hefts his bag over his good shoulder. "Come on up." All of Bucky's belongings came to him in Shield's detention facility, and they fit into a duffel bag which Bucky insists on carrying himself. There's a few pairs of sweatpants, t-shirts, and boxer shorts that Steve had purchased, the Stark tablet from Tony, and a stress ball and earplugs from Sam. It's not much, and Steve assumes that Bucky has more clothing and a weapons cache stashed somewhere in DC. He can't access it, though. The ankle monitor will call a Shield team if Bucky leaves the apartment's coordinates or wanders more than 5 feet away from Steve's biometric signature. Steve unlocks the front door and holds it open for Bucky and Sam to enter. He spots Sharon conveniently arriving at the mailboxes just at that moment, and she smiles at the three of them as she opens her mailbox and pulls out a few envelopes. "Oh, hey, guys," she says casually. Steve gives her an unimpressed look, but Sam returns her smile. "Hello, ma'am," he flirts. She raises an eyebrow saucily, and Sam leans against the mailboxes. "Get anything good?" "Just some bills and a letter from Aunt Peggy. I specifically asked her for more embarrassing stories about Steve, so I'm hoping it's good," she says with a devious grin. Sam and Sharon have been dancing around each other for months without any real intent, likely because Sharon's married to her work and Sam has something on-again-off-again with a girl named Leela in Harlem. But sometimes they distract each other enough for Steve to get a breather from the constant eyes of his two bodyguards, one official and one self-appointed, and he hopes that this is one of those times. He wants to get Bucky settled in when it's just the two of them. He gently puts a hand at the small of Bucky's back to propel him onwards to the staircase, but Bucky doesn't move forward. He's staring at Sharon, slack-jawed. "Peggy, as in Agent Carter? You're her niece," he asks. Steve can't place the expression flickering across Bucky's face, but he assumes its shock at finding pieces of their past embedded in this new time and place. It still shocks Steve sometimes that Peggy had already been an old woman when Sharon was born, and that his neighbor had grown up playing with Peggy's perfume and scarves and, probably, her pistols. "She's my great aunt. I guess you knew her in her prime, too," Sharon says, dropping the disinterested mail checker act. She actually looks interested in Bucky's memories of Peggy, but Bucky looks uncomfortable. "I did. She was a looker," he says. With that, he moves forward and Steve's hand falls through the air and back to his own side. "I'm gonna go show him around," Steve says with a smile and a glance at Sam silently asking him to take his time. Sam holds up 5 fingers on his left hand and Steve nods, grateful, before following Bucky. Bucky does know where he's going because he's visited Steve once before. By the time Steve steps onto his floor, Bucky is already standing in front of the apartment door and staring at the doorknob like he's debating breaking in. Steve has to stand directly behind him, nearly plastering himself to Bucky's back while he unlocks the door, and something in his heart unclenches when Bucky doesn't react to the proximity. "Can't believe she's related to Peggy. Makes sense, though," he mumbles. It doesn't make sense to Steve, but he makes a mental note to record it later and steps into the entryway behind Bucky. "Want the tour?" Steve asks, toeing off his sneakers. Bucky watches him and does the same with his boots. He looks around but doesn't answer, so Steve takes his duffel bag and leads the way forward. "So this is the living room, which you're pretty familiar with. Over there is a bathroom and the laundry room. That's a closet," he points, "and this is the kitchen dining area. Everything's pretty open out here, and you can use whatever space you want." Bucky's eyes follow his finger, but he doesn't seem to have any comments or questions, so Steve continues the tour. "The bedrooms are back here," he leads. "This is my bedroom, which, well, you've been there. This is your bedroom. That's an office, though I really just use it for clutter and free weights. And this is the bathroom," he says as he flips on the bathroom light. The apartment only has one shower, and the bathroom's 2 doors open both into Steve's bedroom and to the hallway across from Bucky's door. "The locks don't really work because it's an old building," Steve says with a grin at the word old, "but if you're in there with the door closed, I'll leave you alone. If I'm showering and you need to pee, the bathroom in the living room has a toilet and a sink." "Can I use the shower?" Bucky asks, eyeing the frosted glass door. The old door had been completely clear, but Steve had shattered it after a particularly rough day with Bucky at Shield. It had been Natasha's idea to get something that offered a little more privacy after Bucky's stint with the two-way mirror. You mean now or in general? Well, yes to both, Steve clarifies. He hopes that Bucky knows he's allowed to use the shower, as well as anything else in the apartment. Now, Bucky requests. Sure, Steve answers with a shrug. He knows that Bucky wiped himself down before leaving the facility today, but it's probably a psychological thing. S.H.I.E.L.D. certainly makes his own skin crawl sometimes, and he wasn't their prisoner for a month. Let me show you your room first, and then I'll grab you some towels. Bucky follows him the few steps into the former guest room and handles the light switch this time. The overhead light illuminates a small room with a thin, stained glass window, a queen-size bed covered in a blue comforter, a dresser, and a wooden chair in the corner. Steve's fretted over what to put on the walls and what decorative touches to add, but he genuinely has no idea what would make Bucky happy versus what would annoy him. It's not like they'd ever had the expendable income for fancy tchotchke, so their walls had been covered with Steve's scribbles for as long as he can remember, and he doesn't want to bother Bucky with his well-intentioned sketches of Brooklyn or the European theater, but he also doesn't think Bucky would appreciate still lifes of fruit and landscapes, things that have been denied to him until now. You can change whatever you want, put up stuff or not. This is your space, he tries to make clear. Bucky ignores him and goes to fiddle with the lock on the window. Remember, you can't leave the apartment without me, Steve orders without thinking. Bucky turns to scowl at him, and Steve winces. Sorry, I just meant... It's only temporary, he stumbles. Let me get you some towels. 15 minutes later, Steve hears the sound of the shower running as Sam lets himself into the apartment. Steve's sitting on the couch, head in his hands, playing back the last 30 minutes in his head. He's never sure these days whether his interactions with Bucky are successful or not, and he sometimes tries so hard that he probably irritates or embarrasses Bucky. He can't do that if they're going to be sharing a space and seeing each other near constantly. So, how was the house arrest initiation? Sam asks. He drops onto the couch at Steve's right. Think it went okay. Thanks for not hovering, he says with genuine gratefulness. Sam picks up a coaster from the coffee table and bounces it against Steve's bicep. Not a problem. The lovely Miss Carter did indeed have some stories. Want to hear? Sam asks innocently. Can you not mention Sharon in front of Bucky? Steve requests. Because maybe that explains Bucky's behavior earlier. It clearly throws Sam. Why? He asks, confused. Then his eyes light up. Oh, tell me there's some Springer shit there, Steve. There isn't, Steve denies too quickly. Sam cackles. Look, pipe down. I'm just not sure what he remembers, and there was a little bit of bad blood between them. It wasn't a big deal, but maybe he remembers it being more than it was. Tell me, Sam commands, still grinning. He puts his feet up in an obvious show of parking and waiting. Steve works his jaw. Sam's laughing, but the details of this story are intrinsically personal. Probably not by the modern world standards, but that just means that Steve needs to explain everything, lest Sam misunderstand and judge everyone involved too harshly. Back in the 30s and 40s, if you were a guy and you liked guys, Steve trails off, blushing. You're not going to offend my delicate sensibilities, Cap, Sam tells him sarcastically. You can talk about being gay or bi or however you identify. That's the thing, it wasn't an identity then, it was something that you did, and people definitely judged it and condemned it on a lot of levels, but the idea of being something didn't exist. Okay, Sam prompts. So the common perception was, if guys were into that, they were still normal with some extra preferences. So there had to be a reason why they did that, and there were a lot of ideas. One was that punks did it because they were looking for someone to take care of them. Money and food were hard to come by. Maybe that is why some guys did it, Steve admits. Punks? Steve flushes again. Little guys with feminine qualities, like being 95 pounds and blonde. It takes Sam a moment, but then he laughs. I still can't believe it whenever I see pictures, but they shot you up with serum and that obviously changed. Right, so the few people that knew got it when I was little, but they didn't get why Bucky and I were still together after I changed. Peggy was one of those people, and she spoke her mind. I love that about her, but she didn't get me and Bucky. She thought that I still felt obligated to him for taking care of me, or something of the sort, and she tried to get me to see that I didn't need him anymore. Ouch, Barnes find out? He did, and he didn't understand that she was really trying to look out for me. He knew, well, they probably both knew, that I'd have fallen for her in a hot second if Bucky weren't in the picture. So it was just strained between them. No bickering or anything serious, but kind of tense to be around them both. Does that make sense? Sam raises his eyebrows. Please, you think two ladies have never fought over Sam Wilson before? I feel what you're saying. No, that's not what happened, Steve groans as he gets to his feet and pads into the kitchen, ignoring Sam's laughter behind him. He should probably get dinner started if he's going to stick to Sam's established dinner time. The shower continues to run as he washes potatoes, and he wonders if Bucky's going to stay in there until they eat. Bucky closes his eyes under the hot spray of the shower, turning his face up and opening his mouth to let the warm water fall against his tongue like soft machine gun fire. He holds his throat closed and lets his mouth fill with water, then purses his lips and spits a stream back at the shower head. Then he does it again, and again. Even though the shield prison hadn't been cold, he really only feels warm inside a shower. It's the same with feeling clean. He's properly alone for the first time since he surrendered, and even though he knows Steve and probably Sam are outside the bathroom, probably talking about him because they seem to find him endlessly interesting, he likes the chance to do something so pointless and even juvenile like this. He spits again. He likes the stretch in his jaw, holding and spitting. He likes the feeling of his hair plastered to the back of his head, finally out of his eyes. He likes the cold tile under his fingertips. He likes drawing pictures in the steam on the glass door. He draws them, Yasha with crossed eyes and his tongue sticking out, Axel with glasses and his hands on his hips, and the asset with an angry scowl and a knife dripping blood. He tries to add himself, but he doesn't know what to draw. Maybe one of the others will. He's probably had enough time in here, and it would be the decent thing to let them take their turn. Even though this shower isn't going anywhere, and he can probably use it whenever he wants, it would be nice to share. He remembers having to share with Rebecca faintly, and it occurs to him that the four of them have never really had anything worth sharing. But he wants to be a brother who shares, so he crouches down on the floor of the shower and closes his eyes. Sometimes they're fairly seamless at transitioning while their body is standing up, but sometimes there's a delay of a few seconds, and they know this because they've collapsed or stumbled during the window when no one's holding up their muscles and bones. The last thing Bucky wants is to fall in the shower and bring Steve tearing into the room with concern carved into his face, so he crouches and lets himself drift. Then he's standing in the other apartment, the one that's not Steve's but was once, where he and his fucked up family reside now. The outer edges are as blurred as ever, but Yasha and the asset are sitting on the floor next to the green couch and playing the story game. Whenever it's Yasha's turn, he makes it sexual, and whenever it's the asset's turn, he makes it bloody. They've had to invent about a dozen games to pass the time in here, and this is one of Bucky's favorites. He nearly always wins because he has movies and stories from Brooklyn to pull from, but Yasha and the asset are well matched. She bends over to pick up the key, and Alexei's eyes bulge out when he sees that she isn't wearing any underwear, Yasha supplies with a dirty smile. Because she is wearing a knife holster. She has a knife strapped to each thigh. Alexei realizes that he is going to die, the asset snaps. She stands up. Tell me you didn't see my secret knives. Oh, no one can know that I am trying to avenge my father's death. What do I need to do for you to keep quiet? She begs. I need you to prove that you are not a threat to me. Take your knife and poke out one of your eyes. You may choose which one, he says. That's disgusting, Yasha complains. The rules are that I can't kill anyone in the first 100 turns. I didn't, the asset growls back. Take your damn turn. Bucky laughs. He sits next to Yasha and flexes the fingers of the hand that still exists in his mind. There are no empty sockets and hideous holes here. Tatiana gasps, grabbing at her heart. I won't! My eyes are too beautiful, she insists. But then she undoes the buttons on her dress. I have a much better idea, Yasha says with a grin. Alexei takes out the gun and shoots her in the foot. Let's try that again. Take out your knives. Slowly, Tatiana reaches under her skirt and grabs both knives by their hilts. She lifts them up and then plunges them into Alexei's chest. You killed my father, she screams. Ooh, didn't see that coming, Bucky interjects. Why can you kill people, but I can't, the asset complains. Fine, Alexei gurgles as his throat fills up with blood. He looks at Tatiana, and she licks the blood from a knife. He falls to the ground like a bag of grain. Tatiana gets into her car and heads for her next victim. Bucky settles in to listen, making comments whenever they violate the rules or the story takes a particularly interesting turn. Eventually, Yasha disappears and Axel shows up. They talk about Steve's apartment and the tour while the asset wants to know about the dreaded ankle monitor. He disappears eventually, and Yasha comes back raving about the soap in the shower. Bucky drifts to the top again lazily. His drawings are mostly steamed away, but other steam graffiti has taken their place. He rinses out his mouth again and drifts under. "Is Sam going to be around all the time?" the asset asks. "I don't know. He doesn't have a room here, but maybe he sleeps with Steve," Bucky answers. He feels jealousy flush hot in his stomach, but it doesn't make any sense, because he learned today that Steve and Peggy Carter's blonde niece are together. Of course they're together. It makes far more sense than most things in his life do these days. She's beautiful, dangerous, and a Carter, the Carol Lombard to Steve's Clark Gable. He drifts back to the top. Their body is curled up on the floor of the shower now, because they're switching too rapidly to keep crouching and standing up, and this feels nice too. The water pressure is lessened, but it's hitting his entire body now. He drifts under. "Can I be on top for dinner? I've never had steak," Yasha asks. "Are you going to run your fucking mouth?" Bucky asks unkindly. Axel scolds him for it. He drifts back to the top. He's sitting up now, and his hair is in his eyes again. On an impulse, he gets out of the shower long enough to find scissors in a drawer, and he indolently cuts at it back under the spray. He's clumsy with the scissors because he's forced to use his right hand, but he gets the hang of it. Navigating with one arm is inconvenient, but not hard. He's done it before. He does find it to be extremely unfair, however. Yasha and Axel are right-handed, and the asset is ambidextrous. He's the one most inconvenienced by the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. pulled the metal arm out of his body, and he misses it. Steve wouldn't want to hear that, though. In his eyes, the arm was evil even before it turned against Bucky. Bucky doesn't know how to tell him about the relief he felt when Lucan's people fixed him and he wasn't broken anymore. At least, not physically. He drifts under. "We can get the ankle thing off with a saw," the asset is saying. "Where do you think we're going to get a saw?" Yasha asks. He sees Bucky. "And why is your hair short?" "I cut it," Bucky says simply. The asset explodes. He drifts back to the top. Someone is pounding on the door, and the water is starting to get cold. "Bucky?" Steve's voice floats through the door. "Are you okay?" Bucky doesn't answer, and seconds later, the bathroom door is opening. Bucky's eyes catch on the remnants of drawings and messages between him and his altars, and his heart lurches at the incriminating detail. "Get out!" he shrieks, springing to his feet and nearly losing his balance. He flings the shower door open and glares at Steve. "I'm sorry, it sounded like you weren't moving for a while," Steve trails off. Bucky sees his glance start to travel down Bucky's body, but Steve visibly jerks his eyes upwards. Bucky looks down his own body to see his Johnson standing at half-mast, but that detail pales in comparison to the fact that Steve is still in the bathroom. "You told me I'd have privacy in here," he snaps, picking up the scissors from the shower floor and flinging them in Steve's direction. He's not aiming for Steve, so he's not surprised when they miss, but Steve goes ashen. "Get out!" Bucky yells again. He sees another flash of Steve looking shocked before the door closes, and he thinks that he's sufficiently distracted Steve from the damning evidence on the shower door. He frantically wipes it away with his hand, splashing it over and over to make sure it's all gone, and then he finally admits that it's probably time to get out of the shower. He picks up the globs of hair from the drain with waterlogged fingers and then dries himself off. He doesn't do a very thorough job, and he's still dripping when he wraps the towel around his waist and leaves the safety of the steamy bathroom to go back to his room. His cell? Neither word really feels right. Steve's whole apartment is now effectively a cell, so it's his area. The idea of having a room is tinged with too much ownership, and he's never had one of those. Not even in his old life. He sees Sam and Steve staring at him during his brief stint in the hallway, and he only realizes why when he's rummaged through the duffel bag and stepped into his underwear. He probably shouldn't have thrown the scissors at Steve. God damn it, he'd be furious if one of the others had come close to harming Steve, and they wouldn't hear the end of it for days. But he'd panicked. He'd already fucked up his first night here, and it can't happen again. He can't give Steve one more reason to regret agreeing to take Bucky into his home and deal with someone who's so broken that they lash out against the only good thing in their life. He and the others just can't do anything like that, sending trivial messages in the topside world, ever again. After he's fully dressed, he towels what's left of his hair and smooths it so it falls to one side of his head. It's a little past his ears now, but it doesn't feel as choppy as he'd expected. Axel probably fixed his haphazard cutting, because that's what he always does. He fixes all of their mistakes and solves their problems. Bucky trusts Axel to look out for him like he's never trusted anyone. Not Yasha, not the asset, not even Steve. Maybe it's because Axel was his first brother, and maybe it's because Axel is Axel, but their bond is deeper than trust. It's faith, even though Bucky stopped having faith in the world outside his mind a long time ago. So if Axel tells him to do something, like let Yasha on top for dinner, then he'll do it. He'll grumble in his mind, but he'll do it. And maybe Yasha is a better Bucky for this new form of captivity. Instead of throwing scissors and choking on his words when Steve treats him a little too much like a human being and demands that he makes all sorts of choices with nothing to go on, Yasha will be a good little soldier. And that's maybe what they need to make this work. It's not that he thinks Steve is going to toss him out on the doorstep or, fuck, send him back to S.H.I.E.L.D., because Steve wouldn't do that. But Bucky won't overstay his welcome. As soon as he senses that Steve can't handle his lies and his issues and all of the ways he's different from Sergeant James Buchanan Barnes, then he'll leave. But maybe if Yasha smiles and simpers a little, it will make Steve happy. Maybe they'll get to stay longer. When Bucky doesn't have an excuse for being in the room any longer, he sighs, sits on the edge of the too soft bed, and holds out three fingers. He closes his eyes to let Yasha float to the surface. Steve can feel Sam's eyes on his back, but he pretends to be consumed with flipping the steaks and sliding the cast iron pan back into the oven. "You left scissors where he could get to them?" Sam mutters darkly behind him. "I think I can withstand a pair of scissors," Steve says lovingly as he shuts the oven door and finally turns around. "But yeah, I didn't hide anything. There's still a gun in my bedroom drawer, and I'm still going to give him a knife at dinner." "It's not just your safety I'm worried about, man. Or mine, for that matter, and I take my safety very seriously. It's not uncommon for people in his position, or something like it at least, to self-harm. He didn't have anything deadly with him when he was at S.H.I.E.L.D. You could at least wait a few hours before letting him be alone in the room with scissors and your razor for almost 2 hours." The look on Sam's face is grumpiness mixed with worry, but this is one area where Steve does actually think he can trust Bucky. "If Bucky wanted to hurt himself, you think he wouldn't find a way? He doesn't even seem to feel pain. Or you think he would have let himself literally rot from the inside out where that damn Department X machine was plugged into him?" He turns his back again as he checks the potatoes. Thankfully, they're soft enough to mash, and he needs to do something to get his frustration out. Because he does believe that Bucky would have already made a move if he wanted to hurt himself. And he doesn't think Bucky would have ever agreed to turn himself into S.H.I.E.L.D. if that had been his plan. But he can't forget the fork tine and the strange message carved into Bucky's leg back in his cell. The wounds were only deep enough to last a few minutes, so he doesn't think they were intended to hurt. They were intended to focus, to remind him, in the event that he blanked out the past few minutes again, to send a message to his brainwashed self when it woke up. Except he can't figure out what would have triggered it. He's read books and medical journal articles on brainwashing victims whenever he wasn't with Bucky or sleeping over the past 2 weeks, and he's gone over the scene in his head countless times. Bucky carved his leg. Bucky attacked him. Between those two events, Steve said, "Why in God's name did you carve that into your skin?" and "What are you doing?" He's dropped all of those words in Bucky's presence very purposefully, and they never triggered him alone or in combination. So why had he done it? He realizes that Sam's still talking to him as he furiously pounds the potatoes into mush, and he catches the tail end of Sam saying, "You can't ignore this. You need to talk to him and find out why he threw them. He threw them because he wanted me to get out. God, I'm already bothering him and violating his privacy," Steve complains as he throws the wooden spoon into the sink more forcefully than necessary. He surveys his spices and is picking a few at random when he hears Bucky walking over the creaky floorboards in the hallway. Sam shoots him a glance, and Steve widens his eyes, begging him silently to leave it alone. "Hello," Bucky says softly. He hovers uncertainly on the edge of the kitchen area, and Sam and Steve turn in unison to face him fully. His hair is shorter than it had been this afternoon, which Steve already knew from the bathroom. It falls over one side of his head, and the water droplets make it look darker than he's used to. His skin looks damp and pruney, but that just makes his eyes stand out even bluer. He's wearing the same sweatpants and Rebuild Washington Project t-shirt from earlier, which is ironic, but something looks off about him. It isn't the empty arm socket, because Steve's already used to that. It isn't the gradually leaning muscles, because he's used to that too. After a few moments, he realizes that it's because Bucky is smiling. It takes Steve aback, because he can count the number of times he's seen Bucky smile in this century on one hand. And it's not a full smile, only a folding half of his mouth upwards, like he's not sure if it's the correct facial expression. But he's not scowling, and he's not telling Steve to get away. Probably best to pretend nothing happened and then note it down later. "Hey, dinner's almost ready. You want water or something else to drink?" he asks, following the question format that Sam had drilled into him while Bucky showered. Give him one option that's easy to grasp onto and one option that communicates his agency. Steve can make himself remember to do this. "Water," Bucky requests, just like Steve had assumed. "I want a beer," Sam announces. "You know where they are," Steve shoots back. Sam grumbles about his hosting skills while he raids the refrigerator, and Bucky continues to hover at the edge of the space, tentative. Steve fills a glass with water and hands it to Bucky. "Take a seat. You want me to cut your steak up for you because, the arm?" Sam shakes his head from behind the refrigerator door, but Steve already knows how insensitive that was. Luckily, Bucky doesn't look offended by his gaffe. "Yeah," he says over his shoulder as he sits down at the kitchen table and stares at the wood grain. He doesn't say anything else during dinner, but he eats like he's starving, and he looks at Steve a few times with that crooked smile, so Steve considers it to be the first win of the day. After they eat, Sam leaves for the evening with incredibly clear reservations, and Steve and Bucky sit at opposite ends of the couch and stare at each other. Bucky holds his gaze, looking raptly interested in whatever Steve has yet to say, but Steve feels his throat close up and his palms start to sweat. This is even harder than it had been in the cell. There, he could always ask Bucky about his day, and they could make small talk about their shared memories, but it feels different when they're truly alone without a time limit. Then it comes to him. "Wait here," he tells Bucky. Then he tacks a soft please on to soften the order. Bucky hasn't moved when he walks out of his bedroom and back into the living room with a waxy cardboard box covered in yellowed tape bearing Bucky's name, rank, and serial number. He sets it softly on the coffee table in front of Bucky. "I don't know if you're ready for this yet, but this is your stuff from your pack." Bucky looks at him blankly. "It wasn't on you when you fell. It was back at the little camp we set up, and the army took so long to ship it back to your family that I guess they never knew where to pick it up." Bucky looks wide-eyed at the box. "What's in it?" he asks. "Most of the personal stuff you had on you in Europe. You can open it now or whenever you choose." Bucky hesitates, running his fingers along the yellowed tape and pursing his lips. "I shouldn't," he says. "Okay," Steve replies evenly. Apparently the box is out, but maybe Bucky is willing to answer some questions about what he remembers from those months with the commandos. Steve desperately wants to know what he remembers, and Sam said that it's okay to prod gently as long as the questions are open-ended and Bucky knows he doesn't have to answer them. But Bucky surprises him by hooking his fingernails under the edge of the tape and yanking. It parts from the cardboard after 70 years with a violent ripping sound, and Bucky parts the cardboard flaps clumsily. He stares into the box, delighted, and Steve can't help the grin that spreads over his face and warms his heart. "This is great," Bucky says as he lifts the intricate pocket knife out of the box. "Did I actually use this? For food, for whittling, for scaring the daylights out of me when you tried to shave with it in France?" Steve teases. Bucky flips the main blade open and runs the edge along his sweatpants. Then he snaps it shut surprisingly dexterously for his right hand and sets it on the couch next to his leg. "What's this?" he asks, pulling out the pocket watch next. He taps at it, but doesn't seem to remember how to open it. "Here," Steve says, taking it gently from him. It gives him the excuse to scoot a few inches closer to Bucky on the couch. He runs his finger along the edge and hits the hidden lever, making the front spring open. "It's my dad's watch. I gave it to you for your birthday one year. You were handsome enough to have one to pull out of your jacket at parties," he says, lost in the memory for a few seconds. He clears his throat, embarrassed, but Bucky just gapes at the watch. "I was?" he asks. "Handsome?" Steve clarifies. When Bucky nods, he groans, always fishing for compliments. "Yes, you were very handsome. Still are," he comments with his eyes purposefully diverted to the box. Bucky makes a sound like a laugh caught in his throat, and then he sets the watch next to the knife. "Letters," he says aloud as he plucks the stringed bundle out of the box. Steve can see Winnie Barnes' handwriting on the outside of one, and Bucky freezes when he sees it, too. "My mother?" he asks. "Yeah," Steve answers quietly. "I looked up your family when I woke up. If you ever want, I can tell you about them after you died. It's nothing bad, but they obviously passed away a long time ago." "Tell me," Bucky asks. His hesitancy is gone, and he seems strangely eager. Steve blinks at him, but Bucky sets the bundle down and cups his fingers over his knee. "Okay. Well, your mom outlived you by a few years. She died in 49. The death certificate just said illness. Your dad died in the late 50s in a factory accident. But your sister got married and had two kids, and then they had kids. They're still around in New York. The family name's Proctor now. Bucky looks at him, the blue ring around his pupils thin but intense. Wow, he says after a beat. And then again, wow. He picks up the letters and tries to read the return addresses without undoing the string. When he eventually gives up and sets the letters back down, he turns to Steve and darts his tongue out to wet his bottom lip. Can you not mention that again? He asks before looking back into the box. And it's so reminiscent of an earlier conversation that the warm feeling in Steve's chest chills. Bucky sifts through the odds and ends in the box. A Bible, some dirty pinup pictures, several of Steve's drawings, money from a handful of different countries, socks, an empty tin jar, and a bottle of hair pomade before he scratches at something in the bottom of the box, struggling to pick it up. A moment later, he pulls out a rosary. The confused look on his face is comical, but Steve quickly sobers. Most of the stuff in the box is junk, but he remembers standing with his parents in the 10th pew, right side, when Bucky had made his first communion and George Barnes had proudly dropped the rosary into his son's open hands. Now, Bucky doesn't even seem to know what it is. Necklace? Bucky asks, confirming Steve's theory and crinkling his brow at the tiny Jesus on the cross. Yeah, Steve tells him. Something like that. Bucky shrugs and drops the rosary among his spoils. He smiles at the possessions, then starts to drop them back into the box. Someone knocks on Steve's door, and he pushes himself off the couch. He's probably going to suggest a movie next, then bedtime. Maybe they'll talk about dinner and his morning with S.H.I.E.L.D., but he thinks they're done talking about the past for tonight. Natasha smirks at him when he opens the door. Steve's limiting the number of people he exposes Bucky to right out of the gate. But she's been checking in with him as often as she could ever since they exposed Hydra, and she's been working on discovering information about Bucky in her own way. He's still indebted to her for the file folder, even though he can't make sense of what it contains. Can I see him? She asks excitedly, already sidestepping him and clicking her heels against the hardwood of his apartment floor. If I said no, would it stop you? And since when are you even in D.C.? Steve asks as he shuts the door behind her. She rounds the corner and looks past the bookshelves at the back of Bucky's head. Nice haircut, she says to Steve in an undertone before she walks forward. Hi, Steve's friend, her voice rings out, like her vocal cords recognize that the person in front of her speaks Russian, but she has to force herself to stick to English. It's probably for the best. Sam hadn't told Steve how to handle Bucky's new lingual abilities yet. Hi, Bucky says, the question evident. He sounds surprised, like he didn't register the door opening and closing. He turns around and sees Natasha. Whatever had been in his hand clatters to the ground and he bolts upright. Natalia, he says, looking like a deer trapped in the headlights. Natasha's strut falters. I didn't tell you my name, she accuses, and Steve steps forward unthinkingly to put himself between them. Did you tell him who I was? She demands of Steve. Steve thinks. Then, no. He turns to Bucky. How do you know her name? He asks. He's perplexed, but Natasha actually seems angry. I didn't figure you actually knew the names of the people you shot, she bites out the words. Unconsciously, her fingers go to her abdomen and lightly rest over her scar. I shot you? Bucky practically yelps. He works his jaw. No, Natalia, I met you in the Red Room. I would have been called the Asset, and I told you to call me Yasha. Yasha, Steve mouths. Red Room. They're more pieces of the ever-widening puzzle. He has plenty of material to add to his notes tonight. Natasha doesn't say anything for several minutes. When she does speak, she sounds much smaller than Steve is used to hearing her. I don't remember much about the Red Room. I'm sorry, but that includes you. Yasha sinks onto his knees atop the couch cushions, and he looks wounded by her words. You don't remember me? We got in trouble together. You were punished, and I'm so sorry. There's an undercurrent of affection in his words, and it twists in Steve's gut. He recognizes the feeling for what it is. Jealousy, because there was a time when he was so familiar with that feeling around Bucky. Even when he'd claimed not to mind the dames and the dates and Bucky coming home smelling like perfume regularly enough to attract the neighbor's notice, he'd always felt this twinge. He just wasn't expecting to feel it here and now, after everything that's happened. It's not that he thought Bucky was going to fall into his arms, or into his bed, after getting out of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he hadn't expected someone else from Bucky's past to be there either. Wait, Natasha asks. She swallows and blinks several times. Did we run away together? Got caught in a hotel... In Perm, Bucky adds, You remember? Steve's mind catches on hotel. No, Natasha says bluntly. But I was told about it after it happened. I couldn't believe I'd done something so stupid. Bucky settles back on his haunches and smiles. It's an old smile, more ancient than most of the memories they share. It's teenage Bucky's smile, directed at girls skipping rope and writing love notes, and occasionally, under the cover of blanket forts, at Steve. Steve clears his throat. So when are we talking? 90s? 80s? The Red Room operated in the 70s, Natasha tells him, without taking her eyes off of Bucky. Steve has to take a moment to process that, but he's not sure that anything about Natasha will surprise him anymore. I should go. Clint's outside, she says, still staring at Bucky. When she finally forces her eyes to Steve, he raises his eyebrows. Good night. Congratulations on getting out, she says to Bucky before turning on her heel and marching out the way she came. Steve watches her close the door behind her, and then he turns back to Bucky. The open, besotted look is still on his face, and Steve's skin feels too tight. But that's not fair. If there's anything that will drive Bucky away and convince him that living here with Steve is too real and too much, it's probably possessive behavior of any sort. And Steve doesn't even have that claim over Bucky anymore. She has someone. The arrow necklace, Steve mumbles. Bucky jerks his eyes to Steve. But if and when you're ready, she's really good at matchmaking. If you're interested. Bucky looks at him, bemused, and then he lets out another noise that's almost a laugh. Right, you and me. Sorry, just... I thought she was dead. It threw me to see her. He suddenly straightens up again. No, really, I was just surprised. I'm not interested in her. He sounds like he's trying too hard to be convincing, and Steve waves a hand. Want to put the box away and then watch a movie? Can we go see a movie? Bucky asks, elated. It's like he's already forgotten about Natasha, though Steve certainly won't be able to. We can watch one here on the TV, Steve answers him. Bucky nearly runs the box back to his own room and then collapses onto the couch. Steve puts on the last movie they saw yesterday, The Maltese Falcon, and waits for Bucky to indicate that he recognizes it. He doesn't. 9 days later, they've fallen into something like a routine with frequent appearances by Sam and Sharon. Steve never sleeps more than 4 or 5 hours, but Bucky can sleep for almost 12 hours straight. It's strange with his serum, but maybe it's an effect of the cryo-freeze. While Bucky's still sleeping, Steve goes for a run, takes care of errands, and sometimes stops by S.H.I.E.L.D. to an icy reception from Director Hill. When Bucky wakes up in the late morning, he usually stumbles out of his room and sits on the couch until Steve makes him breakfast. Even though Steve's told him to help himself to anything in the fridge or cupboards, he doesn't seem to get it, but Steve doesn't mind making him toast and tea. Sometimes he makes eggs. Once he made breakfast sandwiches, and Bucky ate 3. He never knows what mood Bucky will be in when he wakes up. Sometimes he smiles as he rubs the sleep out of his eyes and says good morning. Sometimes he wraps himself in a blanket and scowls, and sometimes he averts his gaze but follows Steve around the apartment like a shadow. After breakfast, Steve will usually read or draw while Bucky looks things up on his tablet. Bucky likes to listen to music most days, and Steve likes to give him recommendations for things that have been suggested to him. Sometimes in the evening, they go on short walks or car rides. Once they go down to a record store, and, while Bucky is afraid to touch anything, he seems amazed by the concept. Another time, they go to see some of the rubble from the Battle of Washington, and Bucky seems remarkably calm. Twice a week, they go back to S.H.I.E.L.D. so Bucky can meet with Dr. Rinaldo, and he's always bitter about that. Bucky is the most mercurial person Steve's ever met, much less lived with. He wasn't like this in the past, but now, Bucky evolves by the minute. He'll be red with anger and then slide into unruffled calm. He'll sit still as a board and then start tapping his foot. He'll hold a utensil perfectly competently at one meal and then struggle at the next. He'll eat something and like it, but turn his nose up at it the next day. Everything is constantly shifting and blinking in and out. His voice fluctuates between octaves, and sometimes a bit of an accent creeps in, but then it goes away. He changes the way he combs his hair. He changes the way he looks at Steve when he's drinking his tea and contemplating him over the rim of his cup. And Steve writes all of these changes down like a scientist observing his experiments. He clusters them in different ways, but no matter how he arranges them, a pattern doesn't develop. It's almost like Bucky's sliding around in time. One moment, he'll be Bucky from 1941, staring at Steve like he'll turn into candy as soon as they can hustle off to be themselves. The next moment, he'll be Bucky from 1944, hardened from the war. Then he'll slip into Bucky from 1935, giddy over the simplest things. And then he'll be Bucky from 2015, angry and ready to snap at the slightest provocation, but also blank, so blank and devoid of curiosity or worry or enthusiasm about anything. That almost goes along with Steve's memory theory. But why the message carved into his skin? Why does he remember meeting Natasha when they wiped his memory, and they obviously wiped hers? Why defines his waking hours, and it also imprints on his dreams? He wakes up one morning from a dream of hot fevers, hotter summer days, and Bucky's cool hands on his forehead. He blinks sleep away, half convinced that Bucky's curled up beside him like he was in the dream, but reality sorts itself out soon enough. Yawning, he pushes sleep away and climbs out of bed, padding into the bathroom and then to the kitchen. His route naturally takes him by Bucky's room, and he takes the ajar door as permission to peek inside and make sure Bucky's okay. The door thing is another anomaly. Steve remembers how angry Bucky had been when he'd let himself into the bathroom to check on him, but nothing else like that has happened. If anything, Bucky doesn't really seem to understand the concept of privacy. He leaves the door open when he sleeps and uses the bathroom, and he doesn't react either time that Steve walks in on him changing. Sam says it might be because he doesn't feel like he has control over his space. Natasha says it might be because he forgot what it was like to not be watched. Natasha's explanation makes him more nauseous, so he assumes she's closer to the truth. Bucky's sleeping silently and inanimately, his chest still, and Steve feels the same fear that's crept over him the past 8 mornings. Rationally, he knows that Bucky is breathing, but he feels frozen in the doorframe until Bucky twitches or makes a noise indicating that he's not a corpse. Usually, it only takes a few minutes, but today, nothing happens. Nervously, Steve shuffles forward a few feet and strains his ears. Nothing. He shuffles forward a few more feet until his thighs are touching the bed and he leans over, eyes searching Bucky's face before he tentatively holds out a hand in front of Bucky's nose. He feels a soft puff of warm air. Relaxing, he keeps his hand hovering over Bucky's face for longer than he needs to, but he doesn't think he misses any visual clues that Bucky is awake. The next second, though, Bucky swings his sheet-tangled legs and knees Steve in the groin. Steve grunts as Bucky gets his knees under him, pushes Steve to the ground, and jumps on top of him. "What are you doing?" Bucky growls. Steve's still wincing from the hit, and Bucky's straddling him, pinning both of his hands above his head with one arm and putting pressure on the site of impact. "Just making sure you're okay," Steve groans. Bucky hadn't held back, and Steve hadn't been prepared at all for the attack. He wants to curl into a ball, but Bucky's preventing that from happening. "Don't touch my body when I'm asleep," Bucky hisses. He leans closer and bares his teeth, but Steve's wires are tangled and he focuses on Bucky's lips instead of the clear threat. Then Bucky's climbing off him and grabbing the gray hoodie that he wears roughly every other day. He yanks it over his head and covers his bare chest and empty, scarred shoulder before storming out without a second look. Steve heaves himself to his feet, cupping his groin, and hobbles to the kitchen. He probably should have just stuck to the kitchen plan from the beginning. He makes coffee and cuts up fruit for a salad while Bucky sits on the couch and stares out the windows, ignoring him. He's wearing his hood up, which is another thing that he seems to love one day and forget about the next. "Do you want fruit salad for breakfast or something else?" Steve asks, attempting to make a peace offering. Bucky doesn't answer, and Steve eventually sighs, setting a bowl in front of him on the coffee table. This isn't an auspicious start to their first day apart since Bucky was released. Actually, he wasn't counting on Bucky being awake so early, but now that he is, they at least get to spend the morning together before Steve heads over to rebuild Washington, and Sam comes to hang out with Bucky for a few hours. Sam and Ronaldo are in agreement that Steve needs to give Bucky enough time away from him. To some extent, Steve is Bucky's jailer as much as the ankle monitor is, and Bucky needs to spend some time without Steve breathing down his neck, worrying and assessing in equal amounts. That doesn't mean he likes it. He sits down on the couch with an entire cushion's length between himself and Bucky, even though they'd sat here yesterday and Bucky had scooted closer and closer to see Steve's sketchbook until his chin had practically been hooked over Steve's shoulder. Whatever this new mood of Bucky's is, Steve doesn't want to get too close, lest the events of the morning repeat themselves. "Want to watch the news?" he asks as he takes a sip of his coffee. Bucky eyes the mug. "Want me to make you tea?" "Don't like tea." "What's that?" Bucky speaks for the first time since the incident in his room. Steve raises his eyebrows because Bucky's never told him that he doesn't like tea before. Steve makes it for him every morning because Bucky hates coffee, but now he feels like a shitty friend yet again. "Coffee? You hated it, but it does taste a little different than it used to." "Well, I just use instant coffee, but you can get these cups, or you can buy coffee at restaurants that taste like a hot milkshake instead of coffee." As he's speaking, Bucky pulls the mug out of his hand and takes a swig. "I want this," he says. Steve opens his mouth to offer to make him a cup, but then Bucky takes another swig, and Steve realizes that he's not getting it back. He gets up to replace it as Bucky sips at the mug and makes a sound that, with his bad mood filtered out, is probably a noise of pleasure. Steve puts the news on when he gets back, watching reporters' accounts of Rebuild Washington, President Ellis's remarks on Ukraine, and a few fluff pieces about children and animals. Steve chuckles at a video of a large cat trying to squeeze through a small doggy door, and Bucky eventually steals Steve's second cup of coffee, too. Steve gives up on caffeinating. At least Bucky's showing more willingness to get himself food instead of sitting and waiting long past the point where he must be starving. "I'm going to shower," Steve says after the news ends and Sesame Street begins. Bucky glares at the characters on the screen, and Steve hands him the remote even though he doubts Bucky will change it. He seems willing enough to use his Stark tablet, but he skirts around the other technology in the apartment, like it doesn't occur to him that changing the channel or using the microwave or even buzzing Sam in is an option. Steve's covered in suds under the spray of the shower when he hears the door fly open and ricochet against the countertop. Bucky pounds on the glass door of the shower, likely nearly shattering it, as Steve gapes at his murky outline through the glass. "What's in coffee?" Bucky snarls. "Milk, a little bit of sugar, coffee beans, caffeine. I should have reminded you about that." "You drugged me," Bucky demands. He yanks the shower door back, jarring it from his track, and glares at Steve in a reversal of their positions from his first day in the apartment. "You drugged yourself," Steve argues. He puts his hands up, feeling very vulnerable in his naked and slippery state. "I didn't know I had to remind you that coffee makes you jittery." "When will it go away?" Bucky growls. Looking closer, Steve can see that he's twitching visibly, and he wonders how much of this is coffee shocking the system after 70 years of abstinence, and how much of this is Bucky's foul mood. "A couple hours. Sorry, I didn't think. You've been drinking green tea," he trails off as Bucky leaves the bathroom, the shower door and the bathroom door hanging open behind him. Heart still thumping, Steve pulls them both shut as best as he can and finishes rinsing off. Bucky's words, "You drugged me," looping through his head. It had been as much of an accusation as it had been a question, and Steve feels sick again. He gets dressed and goes out to the living room to find some way to apologize, but Bucky's raptly watching Sesame Street. "Hi," he greets Steve pleasantly enough when he turns his head in Steve's direction. His hood is down around his shoulders. He half smiles at something Ernie says. Steve wonders if he's going crazy. Then his brain readjusts the perspective, and he wonders if Bucky is the one who's gone crazy. Can all of these symptoms from his shifting moods to his docility with Hydra be attributed to something as simple as insanity? But that isn't right. Bucky's far too lucid to be compared to crazy Nestor Fallon, the troubled neighbor of Steve's youth, who'd been carted away to a loony bin in front of his children when Steve was 12. He and Bucky had watched it from Bucky's balcony, and the man had been spitting and clawing at his own arms, getting blood on the orderlies and screaming up a racket about being Satan's darling boy. Bucky is in no way that man. And even if his understanding of insanity is off, as all of his medical knowledge in this century, Rinaldo certainly knows her stuff. She'd have caught it if Bucky needed to be in an asylum instead of on Steve's couch, vibrating from caffeine and enraptured by children's television. "How are they doing that?" Bucky asks, pointing to the screen. "They're puppets," Steve tries to swallow back all of the emotions from the past 10 minutes. From Bucky barging in on him to his short-lived realization, he feels like he's already exhausted from today, and it's barely begun. "We saw some puppets at a fair." "That's a puppet?" Bucky crinkles his eyebrow. "Someone's called me that before, but that doesn't make sense." "Who called you a puppet?" Steve asks, furious and defeated all in the same breath. Bucky opens his mouth to reply, then snaps it shut. "Some guy in Hydra," he says eventually. He's not lying very well. Steve sighs and goes to make a note about it. He comes back from volunteering at the Potomac site, as frantically eager as a parent with a new baby, but the sight that greets him inside his apartment is surprising. "Hey, man," Sam calls out, holding up a beer in greeting. Steve raises an eyebrow when he sees that Bucky has a beer too, but there's nothing in Rinaldo's instructions that says he can't drink alcohol. After this morning, though, Steve's hesitant. "We have had an awesome time without you," Sam brags. "Barnes here got tired of PBS pretty early on, but I graciously offered to take him on a tour of my other childhood programming." Steve looks up to the screen to see. He doesn't have any words for what he's seeing. He may be much more accustomed to 21st century media than Bucky is, but he still can't believe some of the things his friends show him. "Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles," Sam crows. "1990, baby. None of that CGI shit." "They're turtles?" Steve squints at the TV. They don't look like turtles. Turtles who fight crime, not unlike the people in this room, Sam contributes. They're brothers, Bucky says. Four of them. He's actually grinning as he says it, not half smiling or trying to twist his mouth because he thinks he's supposed to, but really grinning. If it puts that look on Bucky's face, Sam can show him anything he wants. In all honesty, it looks like Bucky's morning with Sam was good for him, and Steve swallows back the envy in his throat. He sits down between them and surveys the plates of sandwich crusts on his coffee table. PB&J for lunch, he asks. He notices that Sam's plate only has a crust and a few crumbs, but Bucky's plate is smeared with peanut butter and red jam like the sandwich maker was out of practice. We made our own sandwiches, Sam tells him with a glowing note in his voice. Steve whips his head around to look at Bucky, who flushes under the attention. He wants to praise Bucky for having the agency to put his own lunch together, but he isn't supposed to make it seem like Bucky's done anything out of the ordinary. He nods and turns back to the bizarre creatures on the screen. Apart from their shells, they in no way resemble turtles. Then his eyes catch on the plate again, and he frowns. If Bucky made his own sandwich, why did he put jelly on it? Bucky hates jelly, like he hates most sweet things that aren't explicitly candy. The sheer weight of the things that Steve doesn't understand threatens to crush him into the sofa.